KALW.
Having a good principal not only provides leadership for the school, but they set the tone for everybody else.
Many San Francisco principals are working hard to set the right tone for their schools.
Every school in our school district is a school where we would all send any of our children, and I think that has to be the goal.
A day in the life of a San Francisco principal. Then we keep it close to home and visit the Burton High School cafeteria.
You had the chicken with the mashed potatoes and gravy, then they had the spaghetti, it was off the hook. Kids, you just couldn't wait, but you smell it all the way upstairs.
And we remember a San Francisco comic legend.
You don't think that you're doing a first when you do it. You just think, well, I want to do this book, or I want to draw this comic.
Remembering Trina Robbins, I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Today, we begin the show with a new story from our series, At Work.
I have a lot of pride in my work.
How do you do it?
Sprays, masks, gloves.
I'm with the Swamp Team.
Hi, my friends, and how are you?
It's nice now with technology.
Pandora's box has been opened.
It's a beautiful way to make your living, but it's more work than I ever imagined.
We often hear about teacher shortages and how hard it is to be a teacher. But there's another key figure in schools that's also critical, the principal. So what's it like to be one? KLW's Sandra Halliday tagged along with a principal at one school and found out it's not an easy job.
Okay. Buenos dias. ¿Cómo estás, Martín?
It's a rainy day at Sanchez Elementary School in San Francisco's Mission District. Parents are shaking off umbrellas as they drop off their kids. Principal Anne Marine is the first person the kids see as they walk into the hallway.
Good job. I'm so proud of you. Have you eaten breakfast?
No.
Okay, grab breakfast, please. And we're going to be outside for a circle this morning.
I feel like it's really important to greet my community, so I tried to be the face in the front. And it also gives me an opportunity to kind of check in with folks.
Sanchez Elementary is a block and a half from Dolores Park, serving a mostly Latino population with an English and a bilingual program.
Okay. Have a good day. Okay. Check in later if you need.
Miss Marine lugs her PA system out onto the playground. The entire school gathers in a big circle with her at the center.
Buenos dias, Escuela Sanchez. Let's change our energy and get ready for school today by taking 3 big deep breaths together. We're going to breathe in through our nose and out through our mouth to get ready to learn together. Here's big deep breath number 1, in through your nose.
The students head to their classrooms, and Miss Marine lugs her PA system back inside. She checks in on a couple of classes before her site team meetings.
I love my job. I love my school community. I love my job.
Miss Marine joined Sanchez as a special education teacher in 2005 and became the principal in 2016.
I don't know how many other jobs you can kind of go from building a tower in preschool to kind of facilitating a leadership to team meeting to meeting with a family about, you know, a concern that they may be holding for their child. And that kind of dynamic nature of the job keeps it really interesting.
Miss Marine didn't necessarily set out to do this work. After teaching for 7 years, she worked as an instructional coach. But then, when Sanchez's third principal in 5 years told her he would be leaving, she got her administrative credential as part of the district's leadership program and became the principal.
My road to leadership had more to do with my commitment to this school community specifically and not a specific interest in the role of principal as is.
After Miss Marine's morning leadership team meeting, she heads outside for recess duty and then it's back to her office for a budget meeting. It's exhausting watching her.
I call her the invisible because she passes by me so quickly and I don't even note it half the time.
This is the school secretary, Miss Linda Castro.
Like, does she have a secret room in the back? And yeah, that's just this, her day. Yeah, she's constantly moving around, yes.
A principal has to do so much, be the instructional leader, but also think about the budget, manage personnel, represent the school, facilitate collaborations among staff. Research shows that a principal impacts the whole school. Here's third grade teacher Ayed Abdelkalek.
Having a good principal not only provides leadership for the school, but they set the tone for everybody else. So like expectations from teachers to students, strong parent communication.
Because of the rain, it's inside lunch in the cafeteria. The echo-prone room amplifies the noise and squeals of excitement as kids choose indoor activities like drawing, blocks and puzzles. I couldn't hear myself think, but Miss Marine was graceful and calm as she made the rounds.
Come on over. Remember to fill your tummy and get ready for learning. Your tummy needs more than just bread. So let's see what we got.
She acts as a nutritionist while also helping manage conflicts.
You know, it's okay for you to tell her, please don't touch my hair like that. She wants to hear you because she likes you. She's your friend. If she's doing something that bothers you, we should talk to her about it, okay?
And somehow she manages to sneak in her lunch as well.
I usually eat in here. I like to see the big kids, I like them to see me eat the school lunch.
Here's my stuff.
Let's do the numbers. Nationally, the turnover rate for principals is around 20%. San Francisco Unified School District is slightly higher than that. What's the cause of the turnover? The SF School District doesn't do exit interviews to understand why principals leave, but it's obvious that they're up against a lot. In addition to having an intense workload, there's so much the principal doesn't have any control over that affects their job and the school. Low pay for teachers, lack of affordable housing near the schools, lack of school resources. All this can make it hard to attract new principals, too.
School districts need to develop leaders within their system to step in, step up, to be leaders within their system, and that's what SFUSD is doing.
This is DeAndre Ball, head of talent acquisition at the San Francisco Unified School District.
When we hire someone as a new administrator with SFUSD, they're not just put into a classroom and expected to figure out how to run a school on their own. They get a coach who helps them navigate all the various challenges and ups and downs a school leader has throughout the year. In addition, they're able to meet as a cohort over a course of 2 years as well.
SFUSD's mostly recruiting principals from within, but with a teacher shortage, that means there's less people to recruit from. Ball says if resources weren't an issue, he would like to see closer relationships with institutes of higher education, more training opportunities, as well as tuition reimbursements and retention bonuses. When it comes to principal recruitment, as well as other policies and initiatives, Ms. Marine hopes the district leadership listens to
a huge number of incredibly passionate, enthusiastic educators who have been doing this work and have some institutional knowledge. And it feels like really making sure that we're tapping into those bright spots with an eye toward what we know has worked for us here in San Francisco.
Miss Marine looks to a future where
every school in our school district is a school where we would all send any of our children, and I think that has to be the goal.
She sends her own kids to Sanchez and got into this work specifically because she loves her school. Despite all the challenges of being a principal, Ms. Marine has used the relationship she built as a teacher to be an effective leader.
And I think just that relationship-based approach to teaching and learning and the commitment that our community has to serving every child made me feel like my students, my own children, would have really great opportunities here.
At the end of the school day at Sanchez, Miss Marine is back in the hallway saying goodbye to the kids.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
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 See you Tuesday.
Her day's not finished yet, though. She's off to more meetings. In San Francisco, I'm Sandra Halliday for Cross Currents.
Uh-huh.
DeAndre Ball, who you heard from in that story, is also a freelancer for KALW. Reporter Sandra Halliday is a fellow in our Audio Academy, our 9-month professional audio journalism training program, and applications are now open for this fall. We're looking for creative thinkers who aspire to make audio stories. So, if that sounds like you, go to kalw.org/audioacademy. The deadline to apply is April 21st. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. We're going to stay on the conversation around schools, but first, a little behind-the-scenes KALW fact. One of our studios is actually located inside a high school, San Francisco's Philip and Sala Burton High School. In 2019, it occurred to KALW's David Boyer that none of us here at the station had ever visited the Burton cafeteria. And that included our on-air announcer, Kevin Vance, who reads the school's lunch menu on the air every morning. And so David led a cohort of KALW staff, including Kevin, down to the Burton cafeteria to gain some firsthand experience. Here's David talking to Kevin Vance.
Have you eaten at the cafeteria before?
I have not eaten at the cafeteria before. I haven't eaten at a school cafeteria since, I think, 6th grade.
So what's your connection to the food here at Burton High School?
I read the school lunch menu every morning here on KALW. It's a tradition that started a few years ago.
And now, today, is there anything you're looking forward to eating?
Cheese panada pie is on today's menu, and I'm looking forward to trying it.
Well, let's go.
All right, let's do this.
Gabe, are you ready? We're going with Kevin Vance.
Am I coming with you?
Okay.
Ben, can we get you anything?
They got any giant meatballs.
Ooh. Oh, Ben, your mouth to God's ears. Okay, let's go to the cafeteria.
I'm excited. I've never been downstairs in this high school.
We're totally lost. Excuse me. Do you have any idea where the cafeteria is?
They're looking for the cafeteria.
Oh, great. Thank you. It's real quiet for a school now.
Well, everyone's in class, probably.
Still.
Oh, it smells good.
So what do we do here? Where do we go? How does this work?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
Hi.
Are you ready to eat?
We are ready to eat.
And who the vegetarian?
Not me.
Not you?
Not me.
I got chicken and rice. I got mashed potatoes and corn.
Okay. I saw something on the menu today called the panada pie.
Vegetarian.
Yeah,
like a piece of pocket. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I will try the panada pie.
Get your fruit, right? You can't go through my line without no fruit. Believe that.
Okay, I believe that.
All right. Get your tray, get your fork, get your vegetables and all everything.
It's exciting.
What do we think for presentation?
Presentation. It's unusual to see a salad in a container that I would normally put a smoothie in. I'm looking at the container that has the chicken drumstick. It's warm. It does look kind of massively manufactured, but I trust if I peel it and take a look at the food that it will look pretty good. It does look pretty good.
So what are you having for lunch right now?
A chicken leg and some mashed potatoes.
Uncle Ted's barbecue chicken drumsticks. I like the barbecue rice. I don't know, the chicken was kind of dry though, so I didn't really eat that.
Oh, I just had a pizza panada pie. This is like my second favorite food at lunch.
What is a panada pie?
I honestly don't know. But it tastes good.
What's your favorite thing about the lunches here?
They actually pay attention to like nutrition and stuff. Like, we did an experiment in classroom time and found that there was basically like really little amounts of salt or sugar in the lunches. I've been having school lunch my whole life. In elementary school, I found a nail in my egg one time.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
What's your favorite thing?
Yogurt parfaits.
Burger.
Oh, I like the lasagna. Oh my god, it's so good. But like, they always run out, so then I never get it.
I don't like it when there's like, when they serve something with mashed potatoes.
And do you get can you get seconds?
Usually you don't really get seconds, and it is kind of a small portion. Like when I was on track, we always used to come in here at like the very end of lunch. The lunch lady knew us, so she gave us seconds, but for most kids, she just says no.
How do people decide where they're gonna sit every day? How does that work?
Our group just like always go for this table.
I just sit next to my friends.
There's not much cliques, I would say, but like whoever you have most classes with, you'll hang out with them more. So that's how you'll sit.
Where do you usually sit?
It's basically any table that's open in that. And if there's like a range of tables, it's usually which one is cleaner.
Because of her.
Cool. If you could change one thing about the school lunch, what would it be? Like, what's your one dream?
Pineapple pizza.
I wish they brought back chocolate milk. they made it healthier by getting rid of that, but I don't know, I still kind of like it.
My name is Mika Sasaki. I'm the community health outreach worker at Burton High School, and I work in the Wellness Center, and I appreciate our nutrition services staff and our cafeteria because a lot of our students face food insecurity because they do live on the east side of San Francisco. There are a copious amount of liquor stores as opposed to grocery stores, and so they are impacted by this flooding of unhealthy food and junk food and food without any true nutritional value. So sometimes the kids, they get breakfast or lunch here, and those are like the only healthy things they eat for the day. I remember when I used to work at a middle school and there was a liquor store across the street, parents would drop off their kids with like $5, not realizing that when you give a middle schooler $5, like they're gonna go get candy and soda, and that's exactly what they did. They would show up at 8 a.m. with a 16-ounce soda. I saw a kid eat coffee ice cream one day for breakfast, and I was like, I feel real bad for your teachers.
You know, I don't mean to, but I wanted like a cookie, just something. There's nothing bad in there.
There is nothing bad in the cafeteria. That's because we have a wellness policy to support our students' academic and physical needs. So students who engage in unhealthy eating or malnutrition or things like that, who don't have access to healthy things, probably don't focus that well in the classroom.
That story was produced by David Boyer and first aired in 2019. You can find the full version of the Lunchtime series, including several minutes of audio we didn't have room for today, at klw.org/crosscurrents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Before we go, we wanted to honor the life of Trina Robbins, who died last week in San Francisco at the age of 85. She was an artist, a writer, and a pioneer for women in the male-dominated field of comics. In 1985, Robbins became the first female artist to draw Wonder Woman in the superhero's own series. She was also a self-described historian who researched women and their legacy in comics. She even drew the attention of music icons like Joni Mitchell. The first verse in Mitchell's song Ladies of the Canyon is an homage to Trina.
Trina wears her warm palm beads. She fills her drawing book with light, sewing lace on widow's weeds and filigree on leaf and vine.
Last year, KELW's Janae Darden spoke with Trina Robbins about her life's work. Here's an excerpt from that conversation.
What kind of images of girls and women did you like to see in comics when you were a little girl?
Well, I think I was drawing before I could read. But when I started reading, which was at the age of 4, because my mother was a school teacher and she taught me to read, my favorite story was Cinderella. And I used to draw Cinderella over and over and over again with her beautiful ball gown. And sometimes I would get bored with Cinderella and draw the ugly stepsisters. So those were my favorites. When it comes to reading comics, I liked all the girl comics, all the comics that had a girl or a woman on the cover and not tied to a chair and being rescued. You know, a girl or a woman on the cover, and she was the main character, not the boyfriend. And I was very bored by all the superhero comics. You know, a Wonder Woman, of course, is a superheroine, and I adored her, but she wasn't like the other superheroes. She was an Amazon, and she came from an island where no boys were allowed, and I loved that.
What did you like about that?
I grew up in a world where no girls were allowed or no women were allowed. I mean, when I was growing up, a woman could be a secretary, but she couldn't be a CEO. She could be a nurse, but she couldn't be a doctor. She could be a stewardess, but she couldn't be the pilot. So the idea of a world where women were in charge and no boys were allowed for a change was great. And boys were a pest anyway, you know?
I know you're from New York originally. What brought you to San Francisco?
Well, I was drawing comics. And really, San Francisco was the mecca of underground comics. I mean, they had publishers who were publishing underground comic books in New York. The only place to publish your comic was newspapers, underground newspapers. And in 1968, I was living in New York, but I was visiting San Francisco. And some friends met me at the airport. And without even saying one word to me, they handed me a copy of Zap Number One. And I have to use the 1968 term, it blew my mind. Because I realized for the first time that you didn't have to draw your comics in a newspaper. They could be in a comic book, just like other comic books, just like, you know, Spider-Man or Superman or Wonder Woman. They could be in a comic book. And underground comics just took off after that. And they were all published in San Francisco and Berkeley.
And so you were part of that underground comic scene in the 60s and 70s. And you produced a comic book called It Ain't Me, Babe. And the cover has Wonder Woman, Olive Oil from Popeye, Mary Marvel, and they're marching together. It was the first all-women comic?
It was the first all-woman comic book, yes. You know, and the thing about firsts that is, for me anyway, that is so interesting is you don't think that you're doing a first when you do it. You just think, well, I want to do this book, or I want to draw this comic, or whatever it is. Then afterwards, you think, wow, that was a first.
So when you all gathered all the artists and editors to produce this comic,
yes,
you, like you say, you weren't thinking you're the first. You're like,
we have to do it. You know, we have to do an all-woman comic. Well, the guys were not accepting me anyway, you know. So my attitude was, fuck them, I'll do my own comic.
50 years later, after making that comic, It Ain't Me, Babe, how does it feel looking back just that you contributed to history in that way, even though that was not your intent?
Oh, it feels great. It feels great to have contributed to history.
Especially, too, because you research women comics as well. So
I became a historian. Because basically the guys were not writing about women, you know, and they were saying, the editors and the publishers of the mainstream comics, they were saying, oh, girls don't read comics, and women never drew comics. And when I was writing my very first co-writing with Catherine Ironwood, writing Women and the Comics, and I would tell people, guys, that I was writing a book on women cartoonists, a history, they would go, oh, that'll be a slim volume. Well, you know, bullshit. It turned out there were so many women who had drawn comics in the past, and they were so talented, and they were very popular. Some of them were superstars. But the men didn't write about them because they weren't interested. They just wanted to write about, you know, Spider-Man and Stan Lee and Jack Kirby.
Female comics definitely don't get acknowledged. Female artists in general. I want to transition to something that you're working on, which is an anthology called Yes. Won't Back Down. And you're the editor. It's a collection of work from artists and storytellers to combat the Supreme Court's overturning Yes. of Roe v. Wade. Can you talk about this project and why use the artistry of comics in social justice?
Well, comics, well, first of all, as soon as the Supreme Court made that decision, and, you know, I think of them as a rogue Supreme Court. They're not a legitimate Supreme Court. They're terrible. And as soon as they made their decision, throwing out Roe v. Wade, I realized I had to do something. I had to do something. And that was what I did.
That was an excerpt from comic book artist and historian Trina Robbins' conversation with KALW's Janae Darden last year. Robbins died last week in San Francisco at the age of 85. Today's Cross Currents team includes Sarah Jesse, Lina Nagia Basuni, James Rollins, Ganadi Joe Johnson, Victor Tense, Shireen Adil, Lisa Morehouse, Angela Johnston, Marissa Ortega Welch, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.